Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. A beautiful day. Little cooler than a few days last week. It's just a gorgeous autumn afternoon. Hope everybody doing well. Bill and Dan with you here on the Tuesday Drive. Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, going to be joining us by phone on the Drive hotline in about 15 minutes. We'll talk with Andy for a while, then we'll open up the phone lines. Matter of fact, we can open them up right now if you want to go ahead and get through. We'll shut down the phone lines for Andy when we get him on, though, in just a little bit.
Be prepared to get bumped, though, if you call us right now. Andy Burcham, you know, is going to take.
I mean, you got 15 minutes.
Lightning round, all right.
Yeah, and then Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us in hour number two here on the Tuesday Drive.
Is tonight the night, Bill?
Yeah, I think it is. I don't know. I feel like, maybe get a win. Go ahead and get it over with.
I had a bad feeling throughout last night because the Dodgers.
Walker Buehler looked great.
Buehler was great, but I was worried that as well as I thought the Dodgers had played, and we've talked about this in other sports, as well as I thought they'd played, the Yankees still had chances at they still were within striking distance there at the end.
I turned it off.
Okay, the Verdugo. I did not think this was a game.
Once it got four, I had no confidence, and like I got other things I can be doing.
See, I thought once I wanted them to build on the four run lead before I was ever going to start feeling really good, and then when Kopech didn't have it at the very beginning of the ninth, I got a little concerned. And Verdugo does hit the homer to pull the Yankees.
Yeah,
get them closer. But it's it had been just a masterful performance by the Dodgers pitchers up until then, including Walker Buehler, who is
his last two times out, he's looked like Walker Buehler.
And you're starting to think maybe Walker Buehler
next year.
Maybe next year's Walker Buehler could look a little bit more like pre-injury Walker Buehler. He also talked about how I remember in a previous postseason he'd mentioned that unlike. I think at that point the Dodgers had a lot of guys who'd grown up with and lived in warm weather, most of their lives. And Walker talked about, pitching.
He liked pitching in cold weather.
Well, pitching early season SEC play in Nashville. It's not always tropical in February in Nashville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. As a Vanderbilt pitcher, and he grew up in Lexington too, where it can get pretty cold, pretty deep into the spring. But no, a couple of huge performances by Walker. In this postseason, if the Dodgers take this thing, getting Walker back was huge, and a couple of the moves they made, I think, reminiscent of the 21 Braves. Some of the Dodgers' deadline moves are paying huge dividends.
Oh yeah,
that maybe weren't. Mm-hmm. Bill, I don't think people thought at the deadline that the biggest pieces being moved or the pieces that are going to swing playoff series were. I mean, Flaherty was a top pitcher on the market. Sure,
he was. He was. He was probably the top.
He was probably
starting pitcher.
Probably the top starting. If Scooble wasn't really,
right. He's the top one that got moved.
Yeah. If Scooble wasn't real, the top pitcher that got moved. Kopech and Edman weren't necessarily anybody's idea of
Tommy Edman. I don't know why people haven't thought that much of him. I mean, he's the card. I think the Cardinals forgot or decided he was such a great utility guy that they didn't realize what they had.
Well, he also was he was injured, right? When they, I mean, he didn't make his debut until a couple weeks after the acquisition. But no, he's been huge. And the Dodgers one game away. We'll see if. We'll see if they can wrap it up tonight in the Bronx.
I wouldn't be surprised if they do. I'll go ahead and get it over with. I like the season to be done before November anyway. So if they're going to do it, they need to do it tonight or tomorrow, and that'll mean it'll happen in New York.
As they mentioned on the broadcast last night, when the World Series as a seven game series, There's never, I don't believe a team down 3-0 has ever even forced a game six. I don't think there's been a,
I think you're right.
I think it's usually been over in a game or two after that. Now, there have been rallies from down 3-0 in other rounds of the Major League Baseball postseason. But as the Yankees know,
yeah, they were the first to blow a 3-0 lead
20 years ago. Yeah. 20 years ago, in fact, against the Red Sox. But it's Dave Roberts, a crucial part of that Red Sox team. As a matter of fact, now the manager.
So turnabout would be fair play.
Quite possibly, we'll see.
Don't think so.
Or the Dodgers could win. It would be the first full season title since 88, right?
Is that right?
20 would be not a full season, and that was the first title since the Kirk Gibson.
Wow. I hadn't realized that. I just knew they had won in the last few years, so I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, that's very liable, I believe, to happen. If not tonight, then tomorrow night, because they'll play tonight, tomorrow, if necessary, in New York, and then it would go back to L.A. this weekend.
Yeah,
Friday and Saturday
Saturday would be the games. Speaking of Friday, Auburn basketball in action. We'll talk a little bit more about that.
That is right. Yep, Auburn in its second exhibition game against Florida Atlantic.
That was a nice pivot, right, to get us back
yeah.
on. Yeah, get us back on.
And
back on schedule.
We actually have basketball before that Thursday night. The Auburn women. Have their Halloween exhibition against LaGrange, and that will be a 6 o'clock tip. That means we will go off the air at 5:45. Turn things over to Brett Bowen and Dr. Larry DeShera.
Yeah, the
at 5:45 right here on ESPN 106.7.
The Troy men have LaGrange College on the schedule as well. LaGrange is on a lot of, you know, they're going out and playing a couple of the D1 programs in the area in various sports. But I think it's probably good exposure for those players And yeah, probably a good experience to get to go play in places like Neville Arena, Trojan Arena, et cetera.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to some basketball this week.
Is the thinking Miles goes Friday night, or are they going to try to play it by ear?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, the last thing was that they were hopeful, and I think Bruce speaks to the media Thursday. So hopefully we'll know. Practice is open for the media, though, this week. So we may get some reports on, you know, if he's working out.
Yeah, Miles missing the trip to Furman with the same illness that kept him from tip-off at Tumors. All the best. You know, hopefully he's back and ready to go soon. But in the meantime, yeah, Auburn with their first taste of action in front of the home crowd at Neville Arena when they take on FAU this Friday night.
Yeah, Auburn was off from practice yesterday after Auburn men's basketball off from practice yesterday after the exhibition game in Greenville on Sunday. They're practicing right now, and media is able to watch practice today. They'll practice tomorrow at 4:15, and then yes, Bruce meets with the media for his FAU preview on Thursday afternoon. So maybe may get some news or have an idea about Miles Kelly today, you know, from some of the guys that are watching practice.
Interesting that they started the Furman game with Dylan and Janai
It was really interesting because it was Chris Moore started at the three.
That's right. Moore at the
so
three.
So it was Chris Moore, Janai at the four, and Dylan at the five.
They brought Chaney and Chad off the bench. Yeah, I think I wonder if they just sort of like the balance of scoring you have on the from the second unit when you bring Chad in.
Auburn, I think, got 50 of their 83 points off the bench.
Right. I mean, Sunday. And with it's interesting that with Miles, even like it's almost as though there's a, you know, there are minutes they have designated for Chad Baker-Mazzara, and at the very beginning of the game, maybe they don't necessarily need his contribution as much as they need some other guys to get going. Knowing what you have, there have been players like that, right? Where you sort of know, you know, those microwave types, where you know what they have, and if your second unit needs offensive punch, and you might still use Chad.
You might have as much or more offensive punch. Not just the other day, but I mean, you got guys like Chad. I mean, you didn't have Miles out there either, but Chad and Chaney, Tahad Pettiford. I mean, you've got some guys that can score and can score a bunch in a hurry.
Now, it's I mean, Auburn doesn't necessarily, especially if Dylan and Janai are starters, it's tough to talk about them as a first unit and a second unit because you feel like either Dylan or Janai will be out there.
I'm thinking when Auburn plays some more athletic teams, you're probably not going to see that as much, but why not get a look at it?
I mean, I don't even know what the five would look like if neither Dylan nor Janai, right? Like, I mean, is A.D. Scott the next five? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Turtle? I don't know.
Turtle Hutt? Yeah, I mean, that's a...
They flash back to Chaney? Old Auburn days.
Yeah, when, Chaney.
Auburn has a 6'6 guy that's out of position trying to play the post.
Exactly. So I would think that Bruce is going to want either, you know, one of his two true fives out there, but the mix and match possibilities with the rest of that lineup, you know, what you want to do and how you want to approach things. Talking to Henry Patton, who was at the game on Sunday, he was really impressed by Turtle Hudson and sort of the dirty work, the offensive rebounds that you saw, where that's something, you know, I think having a player or two.
Yeah, he was second on the team in rebounding with seven.
Yeah, and I think three or four of them are offensive rebounds, and so like having a guy willing to stick his stick the turtle head right in there in the mix of things and get physical. Like, I think that's going to be a welcome addition to a team that has a lot of guys that are very comfortable looking for their own shot, and to have somebody who's we've talked about adding JP Pegues, who is very comfortable getting shots for other people, but also somebody like Turtle Hudson, who's very comfortable doing the Chris Moore, not necessarily going to show up on the box score type of dirty
work. He's a guy that'll defend, rebound, and can get some garbage shots. He's not going to be a guy that you're trying to force the ball into, but he's really good at keeping plays alive and helping. Helping out inside.
Which I think DeSean Murray played a role like that for Auburn a couple of years ago and was very useful in his moment. So I think that would be, if Auburn can get something like that from Turtle Hudson, who's a little bit bigger and comes in with some experience from different programs, that would be, I think that'd be really nice.
Yeah, no question. So I know that no doubt there's a lot of excitement about Auburn basketball, and it'll get started Friday evening. So that is a game, again, not part of the season ticket. So there could be a lot of folks who don't get to go to games on a regular basis that'll be able to see Auburn on Friday, the night before the Vandy game. All right, we'll go ahead and get to our first break of the afternoon. When we come back, we're going to check in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Result 1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. Right now, we'll head to the Drive hotline. Welcome in the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I hope you guys are having a great day. It's a beautiful, beautiful day, and getting ready to finally call some home football again. Some basketball to boot.
That's right. I mean, we've got a lot going on here locally, but it has been a while. I mean, it will have been, a month since Auburn had played a home game. And I thought very, very important that they did not go 0 for October. That a huge win this past Saturday up in Lexington. Did we lose him? Sounded like heard the phone
we
clip.
I just heard a click. I finished asking the question. I wasn't touching.
No, you didn't touch anything.
We will reconnect with Andy Burcham. Briefly.
Yeah, Andy, of course, was there for the didn't get a chance to see the basketball. We were talking to him about that. Would have been a little tough after that night game in Lexington the other night. But women's basketball coming up right here on ESPN 106.7. That's where you'll find Auburn women's basketball all year long here on ESPN 106.7. And they've got an exhibition against LaGrange College on Thursday at 6 o'clock. So airtime will be at 5:45. So we'll get off a little early on Halloween. That'll give me time to get home and get ready for the trick-or-treaters on Halloween. And then Friday evening, Auburn and Florida Atlantic in the final exhibition before the regular season opener next Wednesday against Vermont. So we are close to the start of basketball. But as I was asking Andy, Yeah, or just wanting to get his thoughts on that absolutely must win that Auburn picked up Saturday night in Lexington.
Well, listen, at this time last week, we were talking about what does Auburn need to do to finish a game, because Auburn has been in a position to do that, certainly against Oklahoma and then just a week and a half ago at Missouri. What would it take? Is it a wild play? Is it a change offensively, defensively? Is it a player? Well, it turns out it was Auburn's run game, I thought, mm-hmm. that was the difference at Kentucky. And a record-breaking performance in the second half on a career night for Jarquez Hunter, running the football. And Auburn did everything it needed to do to win that game, in spite of a frustrating end to the first half, and it was. Auburn came out and took that opening drive of the second half and drove the field, and Jarquez punched it in for the touchdown, and Auburn established itself, I thought, established the tone for the rest of that game with that first drive of the third quarter.
Yeah, to hear Coach Freeze tell the story of Jarquez at after the Missouri game, sending a text to the coaching staff or the team, assuming some of the responsibility for the loss at Missouri, because you know he really thought that he'd be able to do more with the carries he got in that game. You know, it's just, you're so glad to see a guy get a performance like that, because Jarquez has stuck through a turbulent Auburn career. You know, I think there's been several coaching changes. There have been, there hasn't been as much winning as there have been in previous eras. And this is a guy who, like, I hope the fact that the team's win-loss record with Jarquez Hunter doesn't take away from the Auburn career he's had and a career night for him against Kentucky on Saturday.
Well, it's still, regardless of the record, and when it's all said and done, Jarquez Hunter will go down as one of Auburn's best backs. I mean, at this point, right now, he's at 3,003 yards, 23 touchdowns, and 10 100-yard games. And as you mentioned, I mean, he comes off of a career night. Maybe the best game. Well, it is the best game from a numerical standpoint in his career. And, boy, it's one of the most important games that he's played for Auburn, considering his career. And listen, this is a guy that is the last player in his class left on the Auburn campus.
Right.
But a 3,000-yard rusher for the Tigers, and hopefully many more as Auburn gets set now for the month of November with 23 touchdowns and 10 100-yard games and coming off of a top four rushing game in Auburn history and the best second half of football in Auburn history. And you consider the backs that have been here and even some of the quarterbacks that have been here. To me, that's a remarkable feat for Jarquez, and his career is not over yet.
No, you're absolutely right. And you mentioned second half. Well, I mean, really, from the second quarter on, Auburn dominated.
Right.
Auburn was at 0 yards total offense in the second quarter, going to the second quarter, and they had 500 before they took a knee on the last two plays. So that tells you how dominant they were from the second quarter on.
And it was hard not to say, here we go again.
Right.
After the start of that game.
Oh, no kidding.
Because, you know, Auburn's first drive, you know, they get penalized again on the kickoff, and so they start at the 10, and then they're 3 and out. You're just like, holy cow. And yet, and as Hugh Freeze said at his press conference yesterday and then reiterated last night on Tiger Talk, you know, his team didn't throw its hands up at that point. It just went back to work. And starting with the second quarter, it dominated that game. Start mm-hmm. to finish from the second quarter till the end of the game. And Auburn could have punched it in at the end of the game as well. I mean, Auburn had it at the 10-yard line, decided this ball game's over. No reason to rub it in at this point. Let's take a knee and celebrate the victory. I was happy, first of all, for that team because they have endured so much and they've had those chances and didn't get the job done, especially against Oklahoma. And then last week against Missouri, and to see that team from the second quarter on to play the way it did against a really good defense, it was inspiring for me, and I was glad they were able to celebrate with a great Auburn crowd in Lexington. Guys, when we went out to dinner Friday night, and then we went out Saturday morning for dinner. We went downtown. Carson's, by the way, great brunch in downtown Lexington. Put that one on your list.
Will do.
But everyone was commenting to us, "Wow, we're so surprised to see this many Auburn people in town." And I was just like, "Listen, that's the way it is." I mean, I think a lot of folks made a big weekend of it, not just for the football game, but it culminated with that football game. But it was great to see that team go over to that crowd in the northeast end zone or the northeast corner of that stadium with the pep band that was there and the cheering and celebrate an Auburn victory.
The Mary Todd Lincoln House is over by Carson's. I in fact, you know, from my visit to Lexington over the summer, I got to see a little bit of that area. Andy, a part of the game, and it can get lost in the shuffle. I thought the third down conversion on the third drive, when Peyton Thorne scrambles out and finds Keandre Lambert-Smith, that felt like a really big moment for Auburn because you could not go three and out and punt again from the, you know, from your own 14 or wherever they were at that point. Like I thought a negative play there and a three and out there would have been, you know, would have been a real problem.
I thought after the interception by Peyton and as Coach Freeze mentioned yesterday, the receiver didn't run the right route on that. I thought he had just a very good manageable game, and not just throwing the football, but the way he ran in key situations on Saturday. And then in the second half, I mean, didn't you get the idea that those guys wanted to just run it down Kentucky's throat?
Oh, yes.
And did so. I mean, that's exactly what they did. And they did in that game what may be very important to do this Saturday, and that's gobble up the clock. I mean, Auburn's touchdown drives were long and, you know, soul-crushing for Kentucky, I thought, and took time off the clock. And that may be a huge factor come this Saturday morning against Vanderbilt.
That's exactly what Vandy likes to do.
Absolutely.
They've had a couple of games where the opponent hasn't been able to get 50 snaps.
There's a 19-minute stretch in the Kentucky game. The end of the first half and the beginning of the second half, there's 19 minutes of game time. Auburn's got it for about 16 and a half, 17 of those minutes. Like that's a real tough. I mean, it's going to be tough to win if your opponent's got the ball like that.
I looked up and I was giving the time and the score as much as I possibly could, especially on Kentucky's drive inside the five that Auburn had the four down stand inside the five that culminated with Canley's interception that basically ended that ball game. And that was a long drive by Kentucky. But when you look up and the clock was under 5 minutes when Auburn turns Kentucky away at that time. Now, part of that was Kentucky's drive, but part of that was also the way Auburn managed the clock in that game. And Vanderbilt is a team that, you know, with its quarterback Pavia, it's tight end Stowers, with its offensive coordinator Tim Beck and its senior offensive advisor Jerry Kill, were all at New Mexico State. And what they did here at Jordan-Hare Stadium last November was exactly what they're doing at Vanderbilt now. It's a team that averages over 32 minutes per game in time of possession. And in the win against Alabama, which I think they kept Alabama to 44 offensive plays, they had 42 minutes time of possession against Alabama. That's what they're going to try to do this Saturday against Auburn.
Yeah, because, I mean, their stats, when you look at their stats, they're not that overly impressive. I mean, Auburn's averaging 70, 80 yards more per game. Auburn's allowing fewer yards per game than Vandy, but they've been very efficient. They don't beat themselves, and they make it difficult. If you let them, they'll keep the ball and keep the ball.
Well, and they also don't turn the ball over.
Right.
They're number three in the SEC in turnover margin at plus five. Auburn, while it has improved, is still in the bottom of the SEC as far as turnover margin. And when they get the ball, they just don't give it back very often. And a lot of that has to do with Diego Pavia. And you listen, he's not impressive to look at. He's 6'2", 207. But the guy's a winner. He's just a winner. He's their leading ground guy with 537 yards and four touchdowns. He is obviously their leading passer at nearly 1,600 yards, 13 touchdowns, only three interceptions. And I'll never forget, I was in my early days here, and it may have been one of the early fan days that was held here at Beard East Coliseum. And Jim Fife was doing a round table with members, I think members of the Amazons, Bill, the 72 team.
Mm-hmm.
And what Jim said, you know, the numbers aren't all that impressive, and you didn't have that absolute star on the team. All they did was win. And that's what Diego Pavia has done. He has won everywhere he's been. He was a part of a JUCO national championship at New Mexico Military Institute. He was part of a really good New Mexico State team that came in here last year and won. And he has elevated Vanderbilt to one of the best seasons that Vandy has ever had. And a lot of that has to do with that grad student quarterback, Diego Pavia.
And, you know, yesterday we were just, when we were talking about Jarquez, looking at him moving to the top of the SEC and rushing.
Yep.
Something that really surprised me. Diego Pavia is second in the SEC in rushing attempts. Only Dylan Sampson of Tennessee has rushed the ball more than Diego Pavia has.
134 carries, yeah. 537 yards rushing. He is their leading. He runs the ball more than anybody else on that Vandy team, and he has more yards rushing than anybody else on that Vanderbilt team. And, oh, by the way, he's at 64.5% in his passing as well.
Yeah, Auburn fans remember his last trip, and you know Hugh Freeze probably has nightmares about Diego Pavia. The last 2 years, he has lit up, Liberty and then Auburn.
Although, you know, as important as Pavia was to the victory last year, Auburn's offense still only scored 10 points in that game.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you still did not get nearly enough from the offense in a game where you had thought you were going to think they had the advantage. And it really started the identity crisis offensively that, I mean, it came a week after you scored 50-plus points against Arkansas. And since then, you've sort of waited for an offensive breakthrough. Maybe you got that breakthrough against Kentucky as far as knowing what this offense can do when the chips are down.
Well, you know, part of the fact that Auburn scored 10 points a year ago was, yeah, I mean, it did not, when it had the ball, it did not do much with it. It also didn't have the ball very much.
Right.
In that game as well. So I think it does come back to what that offense with Diego Pavia did. And part of that is when Auburn did have the ball, it also didn't do very much as well.
Couple of other thoughts. Andy, can you stick with us through a break?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But I want to get a couple more thoughts on football before we get to break. The youngsters, Hugh Freeze mentioned it yesterday, six freshmen in on that drive that was culminated with the goal line stand. You've got more and more youngsters that are playing, especially there on defense. But really good to see the honorees, Jake Crawford, a National Freshman of the Week, Jarquez Hunter, not only the offensive player, but he's the Doak Walker National Running Back of the Week, Tutal's the offensive lineman, and Keldrick Falk, the defensive lineman. So, I mean, really good to see these guys stepping up, but I'm really impressed with some of the youngsters on defense. I mean, from the front with, you know, Keldrick's not a freshman, but I mean, the guys that have multiple years of eligibility left who seem to be really improving week by week.
Well, to me, that bodes so well for the future. I don't think Auburn wanted to play as many freshmen as it has, especially defensively. I don't think Auburn had a choice due to injuries and guys just needing to step up. But what Jay Crawford has done and what Caleb Harris has done and Sylvester Smith has done, and what we continue to see is the emergence of DeMarcus Riddick for Auburn and Amaris Williams.
Malik Blockton.
Every one of those guys is either a freshman or a redshirt freshman for the Tigers. DJ Barber backing up Dorian Mausi on the other side. I mean, all of those guys are youngsters for this Auburn team. And it goes to back to show you as well. What Hugh Freeze said from the beginning, after that first recruiting class where he was just getting bodies in here, he was going to the high school ranks. And we see it with those four wide receivers. And we see it with, you know, all of those defensive players that are getting important playing time. Collins Magoo, what he has done for Auburn with regard to special teams. I mean, there are freshmen making important contributions for this team all over the field. Now, is that optimum for Auburn? No. But the experience that this team is getting and these freshmen are getting for Auburn, and it's the same message for this 25 recruiting class and this 26 recruiting class, that Auburn right now is top five right now in both. It just bodes so well for Auburn, not only for the future, but for the rest of this season and how well these youngsters are playing for the Tigers.
No question about it. We're talking with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. We're going to get to our bottom of the hour break. We'll talk some basketball when we come back. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Edward Via College of
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio on this Tuesday afternoon, joined by the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, as you mentioned, basketball season is here, really. I mean, Auburn has played its first, Auburn, the Auburn men played their first exhibition on Sunday up in Greenville and came away with a 20-plus point win over Furman. We've got Johnny Harris and the Auburn women take the court Thursday night in a game that can be heard right here on ESPN 106.7, an exhibition against LaGrange. And then Friday night, it's Auburn's final exhibition as Florida Atlantic comes in town. So, I mean, it's great to have round ball here.
No longer FAU. They prefer Florida Atlantic now, from what I gather.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so you were correct, Bill. You were correct in saying that. The Auburn women host LaGrange College on Thursday. Britt, Dr. Leia DeShera with the call on ESPN 106.7 at 4:45. That game is a 6 o'clock start and free admission for that game. For the Friday night game, the Auburn-Florida Atlantic exhibition game, all the proceeds from that game will go to the Mountain Scholars Program. There are still tickets available to buy for that game, hopefully a sellout crowd for that one. It's a Florida Atlantic team that was 25-9 last year, 14-4 in the AAC, a year after going to the Final Four. But it is a completely new team that the Owls bring in Friday night. Now, they won their first exhibition game over St. Leo, 104-53, but it is a brand new team that comes in. And just taking a look, it's a big, big roster as far. I mean, they'll go 6'11", 7 foot across the front line if they start the same five that they started last week against St. Leo. So Auburn will contend with some size coming in. John Jacobs is in his first season, a former assistant coach, matter of fact, an assistant coach on the national championship team at Baylor. So while this program comes in with, I mean, back-to-back fabulous years for Florida Atlantic, it is a brand-new roster for Florida Atlantic this season. Auburn did not get out of the gate real well,
right,
I thought, against Furman, and I was not at the Furman game. I was following along with a lot of folks, just watching the progress of that game. Mm-hmm. Jani Broome was really good for Auburn. And talking to a couple folks that were there, if Auburn had done nothing but dump the ball to Jani and Dylan Cardwell all game long, that's a blowout from the start. But Auburn wanted to work on everything. And still, Jani had a double-double and 59 double-doubles in his career, 23 of those coming at Auburn. And I don't know if Auburn will have Miles Kelly available this Friday. He's been out for about a week and a half because of illness. He was there in Greenville on Sunday, but did not play for the Tigers. So we'll get an update from Coach Pro a little bit later in the week as to Miles Kelly's availability. But even after this, Bill, I mean, it's a pretty quick turnaround for Auburn to open the season. Both the women open on Monday against Southern Illinois, and then the men, of course, open their season against Vermont on Wednesday next week. So it is the crossover season for us. And then, of course, on Saturday, Auburn football, as the Tigers get the early game against Vanderbilt, 11:47 is the official kickoff time. We're on the air at 8:30.
I'm still reeling from the FAU thing. So they don't want to be called FAU. Like even
that's correct.
Wow.
Been notified that they want to go by Florida Atlantic.
That's. I mean, I remember.
Takes longer to say.
I remember a couple of years ago they were sort of adamant about just using like the abbreviation. I think in football marketing. So that's a change. You know, at the top to go to Florida. I know. ULM only wants ULM, and we're going to see them in a couple of a couple of weeks in football.
Right.
Yeah. Now the you mentioned Auburn got out to a slow start. They struggled shooting the three the other night, and that's one of the areas where you know really looking forward to the addition of Miles. Denver Jones is a guy that I think everyone expects to shoot it pretty well this year, but he struggled the other night. I think he was 2 for 11.
I think we'll see Denver have a big year, Bill. I just do. I thought the last quarter of his first season at Auburn last year, we started to see Denver emerge for the Tigers. And I think that will continue this year. He's going to get I think he's going to get some playing time as well at that point guard spot. I get the idea. He kind of looks forward to that. So, and listen, I mean, Auburn put it together in the second half and kind of pulled away in the second half against Furman. I'll be very interested to see how this team performs on Friday. We will have the call, by the way, on Friday. It will be digital only. It will only be on the Auburn app on Friday. We're going to do a very short pregame show starting at 6:55, and then Brad, myself, Jacob Hillman will have the call Friday night from Neville Arena.
Yeah, one of those quick turnarounds from Friday night. Then you've got the early start. At least it's not it's not the 11. It's 11:47. You said it's not going to be the 11.
Right.
So when are you guys coming on? Are you coming on at? Did you say that a little while ago? I knew you said 11:47.
Yeah, we're on the air at 8:30. I'm just spending the night. I'm just going to go to my office and spend the night here. I've got a couch. So what the heck?
Oh, there you go. There you go. Just right across the street.
It'll be a short turnaround, but heck, guys, it's going to be a fun weekend.
You know,
it's going to be a fun weekend, Bill.
Well, you know, it's funny. Yesterday, I just have this feeling that even though it's an 11, even though it's that early start, that pre-noon start, that it's going to be livelier than a lot of these 11 o'clock starts. I think the Auburn fans are really, you know, they really were so hungry for that win. They've gotten it, and I see an awful lot of people looking for Vandy tickets for this weekend.
Well, I think it's a combination. One, obviously, folks are excited after the win at Kentucky, and it's Auburn's first home game, as you mentioned, since September. Auburn just hasn't played around here in a month. So, yeah, I would be a little bit concerned of an 11:47 start. Typically, I don't think it matters. I just don't think it matters going into this one. And it's not your father's Vanderbilt team that Auburn's facing.
No, not at all.
Either.
It may be your grandfather's or great-grandfather's.
Grants, yes.
Andy, what else you got going on? Tell us about Talking Tigers. What's coming up?
Yeah. Talking Tigers podcast this week features Elijah McAllister, speaking of Vanderbilt and Auburn, former Vandy player, played with Auburn last season, now working on his PhD at Auburn, the latest Cliff Hare Award winner. Boy, you're talking about an impressive young man, and he is that. Also working in Auburn Athletics Administration right now. Moving forward, coming this Monday, we talk On to Victory with the executive director of On to Victory, Brett Whiteside, and one of those student athletes that is benefiting from NIL and On to Victory, Cam Coleman, on the podcast with Brett on Monday. The following Monday is Veterans Day, and we're going to let Josh Wetzel tell that story. Member of the Auburn athletics staff, a veteran with an incredible story to tell about his time before Auburn and his time in the Middle East serving our country, the explosion that took both of his legs, and what he has done with his life since then, and Auburn's role in that. So that is our November 11th Talking Tigers podcast. And on November the 18th, we're going to talk some golf with the three members from Auburn's men's and women's golf teams that were part of the winning Arnold Palmer Cup this summer. So that's the next 3 weeks. Next 3 weeks on the Talking Tigers podcast. Again, we'll be on the air at 6:55 on the Auburn Tigers app Friday for Auburn basketball against Florida Atlantic. And then at 8:30 on Saturday morning, it's the Tiger Tailgate Show presented by Konecka Sausage across from the Cam Newton statue. A lot of the 2004 team will be part of that, including both coordinators, Gene Chizik and Al Borges, will join us on the stage.
Oh, that's great.
Along with members of that 04 team that will be honored with a reunion this coming weekend.
You know, far be it from me. I'm not an expert on these things. You don't change a school's name a year after they make the Final Four. Like, I mean, how many people found out about FAU like a year ago? When they're
now, now they want people to know what FAU stands for. That's
whatever,
all.
Whatever.
Andy, it's great. We really appreciate you spending a little time with us. Great to have you back in town for a weekend. It's going to be a busy one, but hopefully a fun one.
Can't wait. Cannot wait. We'll hope to see lots of folks all weekend long, starting on Thursday with that women's exhibition, the men's exhibition Friday, and Auburn Vanderbilt on Saturday.
All right, Andy. Thanks again. Take care.
My pleasure, guys. War Eagle.
The voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us as he does each Tuesday. And we will get to our final break of hour number one. Anthony, hang on. Appreciate you holding on. You'll be up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
Don't buy the lie. This is Lee County District Attorney Jessica Venturi with tips.
Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. And let's get right to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Anthony, thanks for hanging on, Anthony. How you doing?
How's it going, fellas?
Pretty good.
Hey, I got a few subjects. First, I called late. The women game Thursday. Who are they playing and how much are the tickets?
LaGrange, and is the game free? I don't want to get that wrong if I don't. But for some reason, I thought that there was.
I'm thinking it maybe since it's an exhibition.
Yeah, yes. I want to say the game Thursday is free to the public.
Okay. Do you know, Jason, who Opelika and Auburn playing in the first round yet?
Ooh, do we have the high school playoff matchups?
Should have. Let's see. The thing is, yeah, they're set because they all, you know, they all have the week off this week. I have not looked. I mean, I know that they'll be taking on the 4 seed from down in South Alabama. So
okay.
Let me I will try to find that. I should know that. I'm sorry about that, Anthony. Okay. I had not looked that up yet because I knew they weren't playing until next week.
And the last thing, Bill, I'm not gonna hold y'all up. I watch all levels. I watch high
sure,
school
I know that.
And pros. And I've noticed some of the veterans that Joe Flacco, Jameis Winston, Sam Donald,
mm-hmm.
Those guys they really need in the league right now. I know New Orleans probably hate that they let Jameis went to Cleveland, and they just announced today that Flacco is taking the guy plays.
I had doubts about Richardson. Yeah. I mean, watching him at Florida, right? It says I remember Mike Leach used to say, Anthony, that you're not going to fix accuracy.
Right.
Right? You're not like what you're – and what you're going to do is you're going to get fired taking the inaccurate guy who looks great and he's a big, impressive athlete and thinking you're going to turn him into a star quarterback when he lacks something fundamental.
Yeah, because they said they really just judged him on the combine, you know. It wasn't even at Florida more than it was the combine.
Right.
He kind of, you know, went up to the ratings or whatever. I think one of them guys, Nick Foles, is he still in the league or did he retire?
I think Nick Foles retired, a year or two ago. But
they need to bring him out and take him to Carolina.
You got quality backups all over the, you know, all over the. Miami probably wishes they had better backups, for two of these last couple of
years. And I called out. I'm sure. Yeah.
Hey, I pulled up the bracket, and I've already gotten two texts from folks that had the bracket. I was completed. Well, Auburn's got Bob Jones,
okay,
in the first round. Opelika has Florence, so they're no longer matched up with the South Alabama schools. So It's funny, and of course, Auburn's at the top of the bracket. Opelika's at the bottom of the bracket, which means they win, they could play for it all. I appreciate the call, Anthony. Great stuff. We will get to our top of the hour break. We're halfway done. Man, it's hard to believe. Halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. Who is it, Brett? Hang on, Brett, if you can. You'll be up first in hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And hour number two of the drive is brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika. Check them online at orthoclinic.com. You can join us by calling the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. You're not going to want to miss the first hour of the podcast we just recorded. Our good buddy Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, talking a little Kentucky, talking a little Vanderbilt, talking a little Florida Atlantic on Friday night. Don't call them FAU, Florida Atlantic.
I did not know that they had gone away, that they were going away from. I understand they don't want it to be confused with FIU, FAU, you know, so.
So many schools in Florida are known by initials too, right? Mm-hmm. You think about UF and FSU and USF and UCF and FIU. Getting people to call your school Florida Atlantic is going to be, I think it's going to be an uphill battle.
Good luck. All right, let's get to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Brett's been hanging on since the end of the first hour. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Bill. Do y'all know what kind of defensive alignment Vanderbilt runs? I really didn't pay attention the other day.
I think they usually go with an odd man, like a 3-3 or a 3. It's a, you know, 3-2 or a 3-3. I mean, but it's usually an odd man front. I mean, it's nothing. I mean, nothing that is, you don't see some other schools do. They're very sound. They're just very sound. They don't get they're not usually out of position. They tackle pretty well, but again, like we were saying yesterday, they're not going to wow you with their size, their speed.
Yeah, that's Vanderbilt's defense has large, and I know Clark
it's
Lee.
It's Clark Lee's defense. Well,
I mean, he made his bones as a defensive coordinator before he got the Vanderbilt job,
right.
and I feel like there's multiple. They'll give you multiple looks. Usually, I would think three, occasionally four, D linemen are going to be out there.
He either goes 3-3 or 4-2. I mean, I guess I don't know. I guess looking at a couple of things this year, it looks like they're running actually 4-2-5 a little more frequently than they have, but they've been pretty solid defensively.
Yeah, well, I saw they actually had four sacks against Texas, but then in other games, they didn't put up that.
Oh no!
Problem, I think.
Yeah, I remember them announcing during the. Yeah, they were announcing early in the ball game that, well, one thing Vandy really struggles at, they're 14th in the league in sacks, and the next play they got a sack. And they were able to sack Texas four times, but they had been near the bottom of the league in sacks.
And I think it's interesting too, Brett, former Coach Freeze's former offensive line coach at Liberty is the offensive line coach who's helped them improve from, I think they were near the bottom in a couple of key stats offensively. Last year their red zone offense was horrible. And they've taken some steps forward. I mean,
Pavia helps them tremendously in the red zone.
Pavia does, but virtually every metric says they're a better run blocking unit than they were last year. Which Pavia helps with some of that, but I think having a unit that's better than they were last year. And I would probably learn. You know, they call him Coach K, but it's Klonakis, right? The offensive line coach. Coach Freeze shouted him out Monday. The former Liberty O line coach who's now at Vanderbilt. He's doing really good work this year.
You know, it's interesting.
Well, I've seen that other teams, at least three of them, have had success. Of course, one was Texas, you know, obviously, and I'm not surprised at that, but three teams had success running the ball against them. I mean, and Alabama only ran it 21 times for 84 yards, but I think their two running backs ran it, I think, like 11 times for 68 yards. So.
And they were behind, too. They were always playing from behind in that ball game, trying to catch up against Vandy.
And the best Missouri has looked on the ground this year in a Power 5 game was against Vanderbilt, too. Like, the Missouri has looked for answers in most of their games, but they were running it, you know, for 6 yards a carry or so by the end of the Vanderbilt game. I think that's part of the reason why. You know, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, Brett. Like, if you're wondering why there's optimism for Auburn to play well this coming Saturday, you know, I think there's a question as to the matchup between Auburn's run game and Vanderbilt's run defense.
Tell you what I'm worried about is all the talk about Auburn's going to be ready for Pavia, you know, because of last year. But I sure hope we don't get out there and start talking a lot of trash and then hit him late or something stupid like that, because we already make enough.
I think the best way to shut Pavia down, as Andy Burcham said in the last hour, is to keep him off the field. Like, keep that Auburn offense out there, because they did not. Auburn's offense was barely on the field against New Mexico State last year, and that was. I mean, Pavia was scoring when he had the ball, but when Auburn had the ball, they weren't. Like, it was three and out, and it was quick.
True.
And they can't they can't do that to Vanderbilt on Saturday, or it'll be a disaster.
All right, well, Dan, I'm feeling good about things, but I don't.
Yeah, you better be up 3-0. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
I thought they were.
I don't.
Go ahead.
I don't think we'll win tonight. Just don't have a feeling we'll win, but yeah, it's looking pretty dang good.
I was nervous.
I'll take a 3-0 lead in the best of seven every single time.
But I was nervous throughout last night. I kept thinking, okay, cash in on this opportunity, build some more distance. You just thought the Yankee rally was coming, and aside from the Verdugo homer, you were able to largely avoid it.
Y'all have a good one.
Appreciate it, Brett. Yeah, it's funny.
Bill, does Judge get going in the series, Bill?
No, I don't think so. That's all right. I'm not ready to toss him, though. I mean,
you keep him around.
Yeah.
You give another season.
I know there's some fans that are like, bum, get rid of him. I'm looking through the SEC stats, which is fun to look at every week. Like I said, Vandy stats don't knock your socks off. I mean, they're 80 yards a game less than Auburn in total offense. They're about 30 yards a game behind Auburn in total defense. I mean, they give up more yards than Auburn. They allow, they get a lot less. Their time of possession, it's funny. You look at the time of possession for Vandy. Vandy leads the league in time of possession at almost 32.5 minutes a game. Auburn is 14th in the league at 27.5 minutes a game. What do they add up to? They add up to almost exactly 60 minutes. It's crazy. That's sort of what you would expect. If Auburn can cut into that, that would be very beneficial. But, I mean, the main thing Auburn needs to do is when they have opportunities, they need to score. They did a better job of that this past week against Kentucky. That's the problem that they had all year. They moved the ball, but then they'd struggle to cash it in for points. That's what they're going to need to do against Vandy and on down the road the rest of the year.
Right, we'll see how much of the progress made against Kentucky was a one game blip, or if it was genuinely representing something of a philosophical change in how the Auburn offense wants to attack and how they want to approach. These things. Not just because I think it's easy to look at the game and say, well, they gave it to the running backs more. It's like, it's not just that they gave it to the running backs more. They gave it to the running backs more against Missouri. And it was limited success. I think it was the ways they gave it to the running backs, but also the philosophical change to let's really emphasize post interception, let's emphasize protection. For Peyton Thorne, let's try to call plays we know we can protect, where we know we can protect our quarterback, and let the offense go from there. And when Auburn can stay on schedule, when you can avoid first down sacks, This Auburn offense is that's
they're not bad.
They're not bad.
They're really not
like,
bad.
I mean,
at
when
all.
You when you can,
Auburn statistically is better than I think a lot of people would realize when you look at the numbers.
And people focus on the interceptions, but the fact is, I mean, aside from I would say the interceptions were a huge problem against Cal.
Yes,
like a huge problem against Cal kept you from being able to come back and win that game. Since then, since Peyton Thorne went back in against Arkansas,
Peyton has thrown three other interceptions this year outside that game. 334-321-1390. You know, red zone, we were talking red zone here a minute ago. Maybe this would be a game if this keeps up. All right, Vandy has been exceptional in the red zone. They are second in the league in scores. They've been in the red zone 32 times. They have scored 23 touchdowns and 8 field goals. Auburn is at the bottom of the league. That's been the problem. Auburn is only converting 73% of the time in the red zone, and just 13 of 26 times in the red zone they've been able to score touchdowns.
Vanderbilt's a top
Vanderbilt's
five.
Phenomenal. Vanderbilt is 32 for 33 with 23 touchdowns.
I believe they are a top five bowl subdivision red zone offense.
Like there's only one team better than them in the SEC. Who do you think that is?
I'm going to guess, is it Georgia?
Who's the only unbeaten team in the SEC?
Is it A&M?
It is Texas A&M.
Oh, yeah, how about that?
Yeah, so those two teams are 32 for 33 and 31 for 32. I mean, pretty darn impressive. And that's where if Auburn's near the top of the SEC in red zone defense, though. Auburn's only allowing opponents to score 68% of the time in the red zone. Vandy is 14th. So it's funny. I mean,
still kind of wonder. I mean, first of all, we'll see what happens with A&M the rest of the season. I think a loss Saturday puts everything, you know, shakes up everything.
You think they might lose at South Carolina?
I don't think so, but I see a 3.5-point, 4-point line makes me wonder, you know, what's going on.
Well, that's crazy. It seems like the opposite of the way people have felt about Texas A&M.
I know.
Because when Jimbo was there, they kept going, oh, it doesn't matter if they lost, they're still going to win. Now it's like, well, they may have won against LSU, but I'm just not sure.
It is fair to say most of the best of A&M this year has been in College Station.
Sure.
And so you wonder
that shouldn't be a surprise for anybody.
But they've been relatively untested away from home.
Yeah.
So it's like we'll see a little bit more about them when they go to South Carolina. I think the schedule sets up for them to maybe go 7-1, 8-0 in conference. We still won't, but they could still be something of a mystery. Because the Texas game is also in College Station, and then
I mean they've only played one road game.
I know.
And that was at Mississippi State.
I know. So it's fair to wonder how that
translates.
So you
don't know. I mean,
yeah,
it's not like, oh, but they really struggled.
No, they played in Arkansas, right? The game
in Dallas.
In Dallas, but they haven't really, you haven't seen it go on the road. I wonder if that skepticism is sort of fueling.
Really, this is their second trip out of the state of Texas.
Yeah, you know, Auburn hasn't played a home game in a month, and A&M's played.
A&M's been in the state for the entire season, with the exception of a trip to Starkville. All right, let's get back to the phones. 334-321-1390.
Greg.
Hey, Greg.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, I've been listening to y'all for a couple weeks here. And it's been hard. It's been hard to watch the Tigers. I ain't gonna lie to you. I'm gonna tell y'all guys. I know somebody's probably already said it, but you don't let Peyton Thorne do too much, you're gonna have a shot. What I mean by that is you got to limit his throws downfield. If you put pressure on him, he's going to fold up like a lawn chair. Throw them dinks and dunks, put the ball in the playmaker's hands. Little quick outs, to your receivers and your check down to your design, check down to your running back, stuff like that. I think we'll do fine, but you can't, I hate to say it, guys, everybody sees it. You can't ask too much of him. And
well, I think a lot of it's because you can't count on the protection. He has more pressure than any other quarterback in the SEC. I mean, it's just that's a fact. I mean, it's tough to want to throw the ball, to throw any pass that's going to take a little time to get it out and get it downfield.
That's
the problem.
To me, Greg, that's been the disconnect all season has been Hugh Freeze wants an offense that takes a lot of shots downfield with an offense that doesn't really seem like they can protect a quarterback for an extended period of time, and with Peyton Thorne willing to improvise or abandon ship in order to and turn plays into fire drills. And that's where hearing Hugh Freeze talk about emphasizing the protection of Peyton Thorne when he called pass plays after the game against Kentucky, that feels like that feels like something of a change for this offense and maybe a welcome one.
Well, I hope, I know what he is wanting to do, but he ain't going to be able to do it. He can't do it, Peyton. And the reason he's getting pressured like he is because we haven't run the ball. Like Michelle, shoot Oklahoma and Arkansas and all these other teams. We got running backs running folks over, doing all this, doing all that. But then, I know he's wanting to throw it. I know what he wants to do, but I'm sorry, you ain't got the quarterback. You throw it long half the time, he throws it short. You throw it outside shoulder, he throws it inside, or he throws it short. I mean, you talk about the pressures on it. They're just lining up. They're just coming at him. They're forcing. They say, hey, we're not even worried about the run that much.
You know what's crazy? One of the crazy stats I saw yesterday, and I don't know the exact numbers, but more than half of Auburn's sacks have been on first down.
Yeah, feels like it.
I mean, there have been so many times when Auburn will open up a series and remember 2 weeks ago, the first two plays of the game, it's like, come on now.
Yeah, I would say even third down, they haven't necessarily been able to convert all the third downs they want, but you haven't seen situations where they're losing.
Third downs, it's more almost like getting ready, almost like, I gotta be ready to scramble and run. On first down, you're thinking you're going to have time to go back and set up and throw.
The first down sacks speak to what you're talking about, Greg, because if you don't, if you go off schedule, if it's second and 19, right, or second and 21, you're not getting the ball to the running backs. Like, they're not, I mean, it becomes a wild struggle to even get a first down and keep the drive alive. And if you can avoid those, I think you can have a pretty dangerous offense with Peyton Thorne.
You got to play to his strengths on it, and I think they tried to give him a little bit too much this year. And when he threw them four picks, or that in the four turnovers that game, and all that going on, it messed his head up. And I think he's holding on to the ball. I'm watching. I'm like, turn it loose, and he's holding on to it. And I understand he's trying to protect him. He's trying to protect everybody a little bit, but it all boils down to this. So he's scary sometimes to turn it loose because of all the mistakes he's made. It's just, it's not going good for us this year. The ball has not bounced our way. We've been in all these games and ones, everyone that we lost, we shot our foot off or made something, the ball was put in Peyton's hands to have to do something, and he can't do it. And they know that. They'll stack the line, dare you, make you beat him passing. And I just think, we got to do take a page out of Gus's right here. This is what it is with this guy. You got to stretch him east-west, think and dunk. And then when they keep peeping up like that, pop on the top of their head. You got to limit your shots for what you really want to do. And it's coming. You really ain't got the quarterback. And I hate to say it, I thought he could probably win us, six, seven, eight, nine games, somewhere in that realm. But, guys, I'll say it, we was quarterback away, in my opinion, from getting to that point. I think we were just like an egg. We was real fragile. And that Cal game, it done more hurting than it did anything.
I'm worried. The only thing, Greg, I would agree. I would agree with most of that. I would say I'm worried that it's putting too much of the blame on Thorne this year in situations where I would still agree, especially at tackle. Like Auburn's frantically moving guys to try new things at tackle. We've seen four different left tackles at different points this season. So I mean, it clearly hasn't been hasn't gone according to plan on the offensive line either. But I don't disagree too much with what you said other than that.
Well, Sam, look, guys, I'm not trying to beat the guy up. I'm just saying the guy that's played football this long, there's times he does something, it's like, man, that's beautiful right there. I like it. And then he does something boneheaded. It's just, take a step forward, two steps back sometimes. In this kind of game, the margin of error, like, we're so close to either winning or losing these games. And that's been the difference. And they can say they won't. I mean, yeah, the defense, sometimes they got to come up with a stop. But, we got to get off the field on third downs. But then again, we can't have bonehead plays from a guy that's been playing football this long.
And the defense needs to come up. And Greg, the defense needs to come up with a stop because the offense doesn't have 20 points. Right, like that, like that. that's been the case in virtue. I mean, the 24 Auburn scored against Kentucky is the most they've scored against a major conference opponent this year in six games.
Well, y'all know this right here, and I ain't gonna hold y'all up no more. But missing field goals, Paul Magoo, you know, what's he 50%?
Yeah, he is.
You miss things like that. You call plays different whenever you have a guy that can kick it, and then you know, just like you know, before halftime the other day. You got to know better. Throw the dang ball out the back of the end zone.
Yep.
Or pass the line of scrimmage or some of this stuff. But then you take a sack when you cannot take a sack. And he and everybody knows he was told that. He knew that. You ain't got to tell him that.
Well, he should. I mean, if you've got the opportunity to tell somebody that in the headset, you better be telling them. I don't care how much they should know.
No doubt. But, I mean, at this point, I mean, he knew better. He knew better, and the freeze told him that, too. I mean, that's It's the little things, guys. Y'all know just as good as I do. That 3 points right there has been different in a lot of things for us this year. And
yep.
You know, I hate it, but hey, look, I'm rolling with my Tigers. I like the mentality of some of these young guys, especially this class. I don't think we'll hold on to every single one of them. I think we'll have a solid top 10 class, but there's a lot of contributors top to bottom in this class that's going to be able to play early. And Freeze is showing that he's going to play a lot of young guys, and, you know, I hate to say it, you know, we got a lot of young guys out playing some of these older guys, but, you know, we got to take a lumps and just hope for a better day, and I hope it works out for Freeze, because it seems like Auburn's always just right there at it, and it just don't ever, you know, go our way. I'd love to see it work out for them and, you know, prove some doubters wrong. I mean, but, you know, it's football, guys. It's a game of yards and inches, and whether the ball bounces your way or not, sometimes it's how it goes. It just ain't been our year. But, hey, I'm always going to be a Tiger. It's hard. But I tell you what, you can't say nothing about an Auburn fan. Auburn fans definitely got to be some of the most loyal people. And that showing at Kentucky was a testament to that.
Yep, no question. Good hearing from you, Greg. We are way behind. Got to get to our first break of hour number two. Who we got when we come back?
Alan.
Alan, hang on. Yep, you'll be up. And you can get in line behind him, 334-321-1390, here on the Tuesday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Right back to the Drive hotline we go, and Alan is up next. Hey, Alan.
Hey, guys. Regarding the red zone troubles, am I mistaken, but didn't Thorn have a touchdown pass several weeks ago, kind of to the mid, back of the end zone? Really good pass. Really good throw. Might have been him.
Well, there was the
That was the it was a slant.
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember it.
Is that the one to Malcolm?
Yeah, it may. But.
Well, because there's the pass that it wasn't a slant. There's the pass that went off Lewis's fingertips in the
But I'm thinking of one that was a touchdown.
It was a touchdown. It was a good pass. But lately, it seems like they're just going to the fade in the corner, and then that doesn't work, and then we're just almost resigned to a field goal after that. I don't know why are they just scared he's going to throw an interception, you know, throwing something toward the middle?
I think they're still concerned with some of the guys other than Keandre being exactly where they're supposed to be. And when it's congested down there near the goal line, that's a big risk if the guys aren't where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. And you may have already touched on this yesterday or today, but the run plays from Saturday, what percentage of those were strictly run and called in the huddle?
They appeared to be much more just inside zone runs, not option, you know, not RPOs.
Yeah, I don't know how many of Thorne's runs were designed runs that were supposed to be.
I think there were
a couple. Yeah, no, I don't want to act like it was all because the sack. I mean, when you look at Thorne's rushing attempts in the game on Saturday, that includes sacks and scrambles and things like that. But no, I mean, they called. I mean, there's 35 runs on the stat sheet for the running backs of the, 70 or so plays Auburn?
62,
yeah,
I think.
I mean, it's pretty – and that's – I would venture to say, Alan, that's the first time under Hugh Freeze, you've had a situation where Auburn ran the ball with the backs more than they threw it.
And the runs where Thorn, the third and fours, where he would try to take himself and get 0 yards going around the end. What is that play?
I believe those were RPOs where he just was trying to read the defensive end and
or a zone read, you right. know, where Thorn has the option to give it to the back or keep it himself, depending on what the line does.
Okay, he should have given it.
There were a couple of times, different. Yeah. It looked like oh yeah.
You know, that's
been better if the ball was left behind.
I know a coach used to call those plumber plays because it goes right and it's a nice little 5 to 7 yard, 8 yard carry. And if something goes wrong, it's a mess everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's all I got. Thanks.
Appreciate it, Alan. 334-321-1390. I just heard from Tex. He's had something come up. He's not going to be able to be here for this weekend. So he's got a couple of tickets plus parking available for the Vandy game. If you're interested. Then we can get you in touch with Tex. A couple of pretty good. I know his seats are pretty good. They're section 31.
Is he looking for face?
I think he's just pretty much looking to get what he's got in it. So, yeah. So if you're looking for a couple of tickets that are in a pretty good area there at section 31, and it includes parking. You can let us know and we'll get you in touch with him. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Still plenty of time for you to join in the final half hour. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Tuesday, isn't it? Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us on the other side. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
I'm Wes Allen, Secretary of State.
Bill and Dan here in the studio, and let's get back to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, and that, of course, is Jake Crane. Hey, Jake, how you doing, man?
We did it.
Let's finally.
Yeah, a lot better this week. It was easier to get out of bed in the morning.
Have you washed off, Jake, have you washed the Gatorade off yet, right? You know, have you...
It's pretty much most of it's out. There's still a couple questionable spots.
The champagne, the goggles for the champagne celebration.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, you know, I knew October started with an O. I'm glad it didn't end with an O. You know, Auburn at least didn't go O for October. So that's great. Great to be back home. Now that was a nice one. It started off looking just like some of the nightmares that we've seen over the last few weeks, though, didn't it?
Man, you know, I actually think that was the most impressive part. And I think Coach Freeze talked about it in the post game. You know, they had every chance to lay down. The mm-hmm. season has been a big disappointment. You're on the road at Kentucky. You're down 10-0 early. And you're able to find it within yourself. And, you know, obviously giving Jarquez Hunter the ball a decent amount of times is something that we've talked about and seemed to be a good antidote. But, man, I tell you what, I really enjoy watching the young guys that Auburn has. I mean, if you want to garner hope from anything, just watch 15 run around, watch 23 run around, watch Riddick run around. There's some young guys that Auburn has that can do some things, and I think they're going to be the ones that turn the tide on the steal.
Yeah, one of the things that Hugh mentioned was six true freshmen in on the on that drive where Auburn had the goal line stand against them. And, I mean, that bodes really well for the future. DJ Durkin's got this defense playing pretty darn well. I think a lot of people haven't realized it because Auburn struggled to score enough to win more ball games. But the defense has played pretty well.
Yeah, well, I think you got to say the defense is the best part of this team. I know there's been, you know, a decent amount of crucial moments where they've, you know, quote-unquote dropped the ball. But mm-hmm. when you look at the struggles of the offense, when you look at the struggles of special teams, this is the worst year of special teams I can remember at Auburn in a long time. And, you know, I was a special teams coordinator before, and I hate to say that, but the product is what the product is, and its defense has probably been, out of the three phases, what Auburn's been the most consistently strong in.
Well, I mean, when your offense isn't scoring, as we were talking to a caller earlier in the show, Jake, when your offense isn't breaking 20 points, your defense is going to find themselves having a lot of pivotal moments where they can't break at all. I mean, you look, Auburn against Power 5 opponents this year, Cal scored 21, Arkansas scored 24, Oklahoma scored 27, Georgia broke 30. They're the only opponent to do it with 31. Missouri had 21, Kentucky had 10. That's winning football. In most of those games, as far as you would think, you would think you can outscore teams held to those numbers. You just haven't yet. You had not been able to put it together enough in the first five games you played against major conference opposition this year.
Look, it's about complementary football, right? I mean, we're looking at the national landscape of college football and still asking which team is the best in all three phases collectively, because the teams that win the most can win the most ways. You got to be able to win track meets, you got to be able to win rock fights, and you got to be able to win something in the middle. But you know, it's funny too, when you really dive into it, you look at the Oklahoma game. I mean, there's a pick six in that game. Think about how many times this Auburn defense has had to come out there with a short field because the offense led the universe in turnovers for about the first 6 or 7 weeks.
So or because Auburn returned a kickoff and there's a block in the back on three straight weeks. Your first kickoff return, you're starting from inside your 10-yard line.
Since the count,
you look at the Missouri game. One of the touchdowns was on a muff punt.
Yeah.
So like the offense is really, you know, for lack of a better term, screwed over the defense a lot this year. Auburn could be looking at a defense that maybe could give up under 20 points a game if Auburn just wouldn't give the ball to the other team with great field position like they've been doing.
Since the Cal game, because the turnovers were clearly a problem against Cal, since then, I think it's been more – I mean, the penalties on special teams have been brutal because you're starting drives at the 10. And the way that Auburn, like the first down sacks, like the way Auburn has tried to be aggressive early in downs and had it blow up in your face, because this isn't an offense that's going to turn second and 25 into something productive. And cutting back on that, and to hear, you know, I've hammered it home these last couple of days, Jake, but Coach Freeze after the game on Saturday, you know, if you're talking about what changed, they really started to emphasize Peyton Thorne's protection in the passing plays they called, and the result was, I mean, Peyton after the interception, Peyton Thorne against Kentucky probably played as well as he has in an Auburn uniform. When you think about what 15 of his next 16,
That's what happens when you run the ball as effectively as Auburn did. I mean, the best way to protect the passer outside of going max pro and chipping defensive ends is to be able to run the ball, because it slows guys down on play action. It gets the DBs, the safeties, that may be walking down because they're mugging a tight end that's attached to the line of scrimmage. It plays with their eyes. I've been on the other side of that. And when you're balanced, you can become a lot more effective at what your weakness is. And when you see the volume that Jarquez finally got, and guys, it wasn't just that he got a lot of carries. He got the carries when it mattered the most. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the way this Auburn team offensively has responded in big moments in short yardage, whenever Jarquez touches the ball, good things happen. It's when Auburn keeps the ball and Peyton tries to run it, or he tries to be the hero, that it falls apart. I mean, sometimes you may not win, you know, the best actor award, but there's nothing wrong with being a great supporting actor. And when you can run the ball, it sets up everything else.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane & Company here on the Tuesday Drive. Jake, a couple of other games this past week. The biggest ball game was one that it looked like, I think a lot of people really liked LSU, and things looked pretty well. Things were going pretty well for Garrett Nussmeier and company there in the first half. But, man, Texas A&M really got it turned around. And, I mean, they seemed to put more pressure on Nussmeier, and they took advantage there at home. I was surprised when I was, you know, following along there, and LSU was getting out to a lead. I thought, wow, this looks like LSU's really making a statement on the road. But it was A&M that made that statement.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, you had multiple things going on, guys. I mean, in the first half, A&M was just getting killed in the field position battle. And if you look at the numbers, A&M was dominating the line of scrimmage. I mean, LSU couldn't run the ball all night.
No.
But they were playing with a short field for most of the first half. And then when A&M put Marcel Reed in the second half, it changed everything. I mean, it elevated everybody's play. And I tell you what, that kid's a problem, and he's going to be a problem for a while in this league. He's very mature for as young as he is, as far as the decision-making standpoint, but also not being fearful of making a mistake. There's a fine line to walk there. And his running ability, because they're not great at the skill position on the outside, talking about Texas A&M, but his running ability opens up so much, you have to defend every blade of grass with him out there, as opposed to Connor Wegman, who I don't know how you don't start Marcel Reed this weekend at South Carolina, which is a really dangerous game for him. But, guys, I'm going to tell you what. You want to watch somebody get after somebody? Watch A&M's front seven on defense. Those guys, they got a transfer from Purdue that led the sack in led the Big Ten in sacks, which not a lot of people are talking about. He's a monster. They got a guy that led the MAC in sacks. So it's not just guys that they've recruited and signed and decided to stay with the program when Elko got the job. They really hit on a lot of defensive players in the transfer portal. I mean, they got one corner, Des Ricks, that's a five-star from the state of Alabama, and the other corner on the other side, B.J. May, is a UAB transfer. So the evaluation process that Mike Elko and them did with a roster that's really not even theirs was incredible. But A&M's front seven will bash your head in and then tell you about that. This weekend, that Texas A&M South Carolina game, that is not for the faint of heart, because both of those teams on defense, that defensive line and that linebacker group, are absolute studs, and they are hammerheads, and they are going to hunt.
Yeah, I just thought LSU, I was surprised, and I know Brian Kelly talked about it after the game was over, that their defense, even in situations where they knew A&M was running it, whether it was Marcel Reed or Moss or someone else from A&M, they still weren't able to win those matchups. And that's got to be concerning for a coach and for a defense to know, yeah, we're pretty sure, you know, that we know what you're about to do, and you're still gonna be able to do it.
Well, and Dan, the most surprising part about that is LSU handled Bobby Petrino and Taylen Green really well a couple weeks ago. So it's not like they don't know how to hem in a mobile quarterback. But what it felt like happened was, and momentum's a real thing. If anybody tells you it's not, they're lying. It seemed like A&M got that boost from Marcel Reed coming in that quarterback run game, and it just kind of waterfalled on LSU. Then they started to try and funnel resources into the box to slow him down and say, Marcel Reed beat us over the top. And then when he did that and dropped that ball in the bucket, it was lights out. So, yeah, it's frustrating when you're on the road. Sometimes it goes like that. But I tell you, if you want to be disappointed in something for LSU, it's got to be this offensive line. Not that they've been pass protecting bad, but they have not run the ball. There's been a couple of really disappointing offensive lines this year in the SEC from a run blocking standpoint. And then from Ole Miss's standpoint, it's been a big letdown on the offensive line. So I was more disappointed in the lack of ability of LSU to be able to at least hold their own and stalemate A&M running the ball, as opposed to just getting beat up, which is what happened the whole game. And then you get into third and passing downs, and Nussmeier couldn't save you every time.
No, and this LSU offensive line was expected to be one of the best, not just in the SEC.
In the country. I mean, they talked before the season like that you got two first-round tackles, which Will Campbell's going to go really early. Like, and the offensive line, look, it's a group effort. It's not just one guy. But when you looked across the line of scrimmage, this was supposed to be the strength of LSU's offense, which should give Nussmeier time and the ability in the play-action game and the RPO game to really start second-leveling defenses. But they haven't really been able to get it going consistently. And listen, Caden Durham's a good back. That young back they got's a good player. But I tell you, man, they just there's a lot of defensive lines that are playing in their backfield on rundown.
Yeah, that is crazy. And then the other game from last week, I mean, Texas goes into Nashville and everybody was joking about it and thinking Texas is going to run Vandy out of their own stadium. And Texas, you know, led and they had control. Vandy scored late to cut it to three. But Vandy's a real – they're a real threat that Auburn's got to be concerned with this week. And Texas, you know, Texas glad to get out of there with that win.
Yeah, well, you know, with Vanderbilt, even with this team, and I think it's the best personnel team they've had since I can remember ever, and that includes Jay Cutler teams that Vanderbilt had, just as far as, you know, the depth on the roster and the line of scrimmage. But they still got to catch a decent amount of breaks to beat a team like Texas. And on third down, that's where they got murdered. I mean, it started out perfect for them. You get the turnover for Quinn Ewers. You end up cashing that in on a Pavia, you know, play in the mud where he scrambles out and finds a way to score. But Texas got the ball out in space, And unlike the Alabama game, Vandy didn't dominate time of possession to keep the offense on the sideline. And then when they did get into third and manageable, they weren't able to convert at nearly the rate and then make those tackles in the open field when they had to have it. And that was the difference. And listen, if you're Auburn or you're any team, like, I wouldn't even say the name Vanderbilt. I would just turn the tape on. Like, you can't think about, oh, this is Vandy. Oh, this is Florida. Oh, this is Kentucky. If you do that with this team, and there is no way in the world, guys, that this Auburn defense is going to be sleeping on Diego Pavia after he literally pulled everybody's pants down in front of the whole world last year at New Mexico State and Jordan Harris.
Yeah, if you're sleeping on him, then you're in a coma. Like, you're not. It's not sleep. Yeah, it's not sleep. Like, you got to put a mirror in front of your nose and make sure there's air coming out. You know, but it's like you look and
congrats, you're dead.
Yeah, I mean, there's four. There, I mean, Vandy's played four SEC games and they lost by three in overtime at Missouri. Probably should have won that game because they missed those field goals in the fourth quarter. They beat Alabama. They beat Kentucky, and they were the better team for four quarters of that football game, and they lost by three to Texas. Like, those are Vandy's.
Yeah, Dan, you know, Clark Lee, if you look at the postgame press conference, he sat there and said, look, almost isn't good enough around here anymore. Like, they're not happy with that. Old Vanderbilt teams, oh, my God, we lost to Texas by three. Let's throw a parade and then go, you know, make flashcards for the vocab test later.
Yeah, no, the uprights not, would be the uprights would be in the river if they covered against Texas a couple of years ago, right? But
no, that's exactly right. No, I mean,
there wouldn't be enough
Clark
fans to take it down.
Extension.
Yeah, no, so it's just, I mean, I think that there's – so what are you thinking for Auburn-Vanderbilt on Saturday? Because I do wonder if anybody has tried to run the ball on Vandy the way Auburn ran the ball on Kentucky last week and what that could look like.
Well, here's what scares me about what Vanderbilt does, and it's smart that they do it. Like, they don't run the triple option, but they run a lot of those concepts out of a diamond backfield. They know they have to negate a lot of other teams' defenses athleticism as much as possible. Not that they're not athletic, but what they do creates a lot of one-on-one tackling situations, which isn't easy as a defender. I don't care who you're playing. But then they really test your eye discipline. So if you're looking and saying, hey, man, it's amazing Auburn had six freshmen out there on that drive, yes, that's great, but how disciplined are those freshmen's eyes going to be with everything that goes on in the backfield, everything that crosses the line of scrimmage, whether it be pre-snap or mid-snap? That's the problem it creates. Well, one of the ways that you pressure Vanderbilt is you have to score offensively early to put them in a situation where they have to start going down the field more. If you watch the way Vanderbilt's offense operates, it's kind of in a 15 to 20-yard box. That's where they want to get you, and it worked perfectly against Alabama, and they killed them with all their gadget stuff out of the diamond set in third and four and third and five, and they negated their athleticism a little bit by putting them in different spaces and making you have three areas of conflict on defense. But if you go score early and you make Vanderbilt having to start take shots and take chances, that's when I think you can get Pavia. It's when you start letting him get loose and they're living in third and four and the game is still tight where he doesn't have to take a lot of chances down the field. That's the best way to go about it. So if you're on defense, it's always about eye discipline, but this week you better know your area code and know where you got to be.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one on Saturday morning. Hey, before we let you go, Georgia Florida this weekend. Any chance that one is interesting?
Well, you know, I look at the number and it was at 16.5 or 17 the last time I saw it. Look, this Georgia team's better than this Florida team. But I don't think Georgia is what they've been on both sides of the ball. Everybody talks about the defense, and I know the defense stepped up against Texas, but I think offensively Georgia really hasn't been what they've been in the past either. But the problem with Florida is the team that Florida, like the hardest team that Florida has to beat is themselves. I mean, they make self-inflicted wounds at a very high rate in very important moments, and it's in all three phases. It's on offense, it's on defense, and it's on special teams. So if they play clean and they use that quarterback run game with DJ Lagway, which truly gets you a hat on a hat, and they muck this game up, right, and that front seven is able to somewhat slow Etienne down. Because, guys, don't forget where this running back from Georgia came from now. He came from Florida. He transferred from Florida to Florida to Georgia. So this defense is going to be rearing and ready to go and ready to shut him down. If Florida can play clean, they can stay in this game. And when you're playing with house money like Florida is, the longer they hang around in this game, the more dangerous they become. I just don't think they have enough at the end of the day. But it's a rivalry game, man. You never know.
This is maybe the toughest stretch any team will play these next four games with Florida, Georgia, Texas, LSU, and Ole Miss.
Terrible.
They got Florida State. Terrible. They got Florida State after that. But those first four, the way they close out conference play is as brutal as any gauntlet anybody
runs.
Here's
the beautiful part. Here's the scary part if you're Georgia. If Billy wins this game, they're not going to fire him because they're going to beat Florida State too. So if I'm Billy Napier, I am pulling out everything that I have in the bag, all of it, the whole kit and caboodle.
Great stuff, Jake. Tell everybody where they can find your stuff.
Yeah, really easy. Go to YouTube, Roku, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's Crainn & Company, Crainn Company. I'm going to be talking more about the Auburn-Vanderbilt game in depth tomorrow. Check us out. We go live 2 to 3:30 p.m. Central. Got to take live calls, have a live chat. Got a bunch of Auburn people that watch and listen, so come hang out with us.
Great stuff. Thanks, Jake. Have a great week.
All right, y'all be good.
All right, Jake Crainn joining us as he does Tuesdays here in hour number two. We need to get to our final break. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
For air that is cool and clean, call SensiGreen, 334-641-5450. East Alabama's premier carrier dealer, the team at SensiGreen, led by owner Justin Quinn, creates a cool, clean indoor retreat all summer long. With sensible green solutions for both residential and commercial, turn to the experts at SensiGreen and Carrier for any HVAC need. Get total family comfort with...
We're out of time here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Our thanks to Jake Crainn joining us here in hour number two. Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, with us in the first hour. If you missed any of the show, check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive, available wherever you get your podcasts, all presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Tomorrow on The Drive, Jason Caldwell will be with us here in hour number one.
Tiger Takes.
Tiger Takes coming up at the bottom of hour number two with Eugene Asante. And your calls. So we look forward to hearing from you tomorrow. But we're out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.